He's a troublemaker, always was. He was born that way. But let's see if we can catch up with Neil O'Dowd. Neil being the founder and publisher of Irish American Magazine, IrishCentral.com, Irish Voice newspaper. He has authored so many books. I read one of your books one time, Neil, I have to say.
And yeah, I've got a lot of photographs.
Yeah, and it'll be finished. I plan on finishing it during the summer.
It's mostly for underage 4.
Thank you. Neil, there are stories and more stories, but you broke a story yesterday that if this were, you know, the beginning of April, you know, it would have sounded like and looked like some kind of an April Fool's story, and provided gratis to all of us by the British government. Incredible stuff.
Yeah, what happened, Adrian, was that the Northern Ireland office released papers from their files from 1993 and 1994. And as you remember, that was the period when the effort to basically get Gerry Adams into America, to get a special envoy, to pass the McBride principles and make them legal. It was an incredibly busy time in Irish America. And what these documents are the records as kept by the British of the period, by their ambassador, by their staff in the embassies and consulates. So, you know, I went and went through the documents, and there was some extraordinary stuff that people would just probably shake their heads, but certain people in the community that were well respected were giving a lot of information to the British at the time, and we actually named the one person who was most prominent. And it just caused a lot of shock because people had worked with this guy and never thought that of him. But it's there in black and white that he was holding lunches with the British ambassador, the British consul in Boston, that he was offering himself as the special envoy so he could shut the thing down, which is what the British wanted. So it was pretty amazing stuff, given the fact that it was the British themselves who were using him, had now kind of cut him loose by publishing these archives and making clear that he was playing both sides of it, to put it mildly.
Yeah. Neil, let's just, you know, back up for a moment. Normally, and for, you know, a very good reason, people who have been identified as, let's call them what they are, spies, are protected, you know, for, you know, 50 years, their involvement, their stories. Is it possible that this is a vindictive, you know, expose of somebody who walked freely among us, and that, you know, it's one thing to be, you know, to have, as would happen to all informers, eventually, you know, their usefulness has now passed. But it's a whole other situation to, and among the, you know, the... In these documents, there is this the first, as far as you know, is this the first time?
It is, because you're right. I mean, the British have done something very strange, which is expose and name their own spies who were working within the Irish community at the critical period of the Adams visa, the McBride principles, and the major developments that were happening in the early 90s, which was an incredibly busy and an important time, which led up to eventually the Adams visa, the IRA ceasefire, George Mitchell being appointed. And throughout the British government papers, you can see they were opposed just because they were British and they didn't want anything to do with the Americans coming in and getting involved. And what was the really hypocritical point was they were warning the U.S. government, if they gave a visa to Gerry Adams, that they would be seen as talking to terrorists. But at the same time, as later came out, they were talking to the IRA constantly throughout this period. So there's a huge gap where they tried a huge amount of misinformation. But they were definitely using people in the community. One was a journalist here in New York who was reporting back about various people, including me. And then the other guy was in Boston, and he was very involved in giving the British early information on things that were happening in the Irish American community and what the plans were, and indeed putting himself forward for special envoy, which is hilarious given who he was. And it really just kind of mysteriously landed on my desk about 10 days ago that the British had released these files, and I thought, just like you, these wouldn't see the light of day until maybe 2050 or something.
Yeah.
But here they are in 2021, cutting loose their own informers, basically, and saying, yeah, these guys were working for us. We were consulting with them. We were meeting with them. We were plotting with them. They were giving us the information. They were keeping their eyes on people. So it's just a kind of a very strange own goal by the British, where they cut these people off and basically destroy their reputations.
Yeah. Now, and speaking of reputations, there were many who, of course, perhaps didn't know at the time, and maybe some now, who didn't understand or recognize your role in, you know, as a facilitator, a negotiator, and a prominent one at that, to bring, you know, America and the and Americans who were not and did not involve themselves in one-sided negotiations, but through a group that you helped form, the Bill Flynn's of Mutual of America, Tom Moran, Bruce Morrison, all of those, at that time, were you aware that now here you are, you're founding a Irish American magazine, the first glossy magazine for the Irish that was having, you know, a tremendous impact on Irish America. Did you feel, I'm sure you weren't surprised, but did you feel that you were being watched and your role was deeply resented, you know, by the British?
Well, you know, you never know, you suspect. I mean, I certainly got a couple of invitations to meet with consulate officials, but that's significantly different to what was going on with Frank Costello and Leonard Doyle. They were constantly sending information in to the consulates and the embassy about people. And it was all part of a big effort to downplay the special envoy, to prevent Adams getting a visa, to basically leave the British in charge of the Irish issue. And what's extraordinary is when you read the documents, how far off the mark they were. They did not believe for a moment that Bill Clinton would go with the Irish rather than with the British. They believed that, as far as Bill Clinton was concerned, the special relationship would overrule everything else. And the other thing that's amazing from their document is they had nobody inside the White House. Like, we had Nancy Soderbergh,
sure,
or Susan Brophy or people like that who were very helpful to us. They were basically depending on this U.S. ambassador to London, you know, who was basically so pro-British, he might as well have been wearing Union Jack underpants.
Yeah.
And who had no idea what was going on because Clinton had no time for him. So they were caught out very badly and they reacted very badly. But I think, to your point, you always knew that the British were out there somewhere. You never knew where they were plugging in or who.
Yeah.
I often remember reading the files on NORAID where there were a lot of names deleted. So there were people, obviously, who were reporting back then as well.
Right.
So it just, you know, it caused quite a stir, but the British did it to themselves.
Yeah.
They put these guys out there themselves, and nobody dug up their names except the British, and decided, for some reason, while these guys are still around, to name them as their, basically as their informers.
Yeah. You know, Frank Costello, he, of course, started, you know, in his career started in City Hall here in New York, and was indeed very well respected in circles there when Paul O'Dwyer was president of the city council. But he went from there to Ray Flynn, and Mayor Ray Flynn of Boston, who was probably, you know, one of the loudest and strongest voices in American politics at the time, and one who absolutely detested the very subject that we're talking about. He detested, you know, any attempts by the British to interfere with, you know, in the peace process and throughout all of this. And from there, he goes, he moves on as chief of staff, you know, to Joe Kennedy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a fairly, you know, neat trick in hindsight.
You put it very well, and you put your finger on just how clever Mr. Costello was.
Well, thought he was.
Thought he was, but yeah, Ray Flynn was a huge figure. So Frank had all the information at his fingertips. He was Ray's press secretary. With Kennedy, what was fascinating was Costello was sending over copies of resolutions that Kennedy was delivering on the House floor about the need for a special envoy. These were being sent to the British consulate before Kennedy even made the speech, so they were prepared and knew how to respond to it. So, yeah, he was plugged in a very important way with two of the leaders in Irish America. Joe Kennedy, obviously, is not in politics anymore, but back then he was certainly a very big name. And
he was a Kennedy, just in case.
He was a Kennedy, exactly.
Yeah.
And that was like gold dust back then in terms of connecting in with important people. You mentioned the name Joe Kennedy and you'd get access. So, you know, unfortunately, Costello was doing this, and then in a very audacious move, which really is at the heart of all this, he decides that he'll kill off the special envoy by himself becoming the special envoy.
Mm.
And
God between us and all harm.
Say this is a really good idea. And Costello wanted to locate himself in the U.S. embassy, in a U.S. consulate in Belfast, and do some work on job creation or whatever nonsense they would do. But what the point was, defuse and end the whole thing about the special envoy, which didn't work. I mean, nobody would accept him seriously as an envoy, but he didn't stop him trying. And
he was also quite fond of you suggesting, and I knew very well that you wouldn't stoop so low as to collaborating with the Irish embassy in Washington. That's not your style, as we all know. Imagine that you guys were, you know, you and the Irish government were drafting, you know, several items. What was the main accusation and misinformation that was passed on in that regard?
Well, you might remember after Clinton was elected, Congressman Morrison sent him a letter saying, you know, now that you're elected, how do we put forward what we talked about before the election, which was a special envoy visa for Adams, the usual laundry list that Irish America had. And Costello told the British consul that me and the Irish government had written Clinton's response, basically. And it was a complete... What we did was what anyone would do, which was when Nancy Soderbergh was writing the response from within the Clinton administration, she did consult with me, she did consult with the Irish government, but we certainly didn't write it.
Yeah.
It was written in the White House.
Now, can I... Neil, I just want to... You know, as we look forward, this was not a single document released. It was among a lot of, many of them, scathing documents that, you know, that the Northern Ireland office, that is there a possibility that perhaps somebody, you know, goofed along the way? Or
nobody read through the documents completely, and unless they were very malevolent, which I know they can be, but I don't think they intended to, or failed to realize, or were totally incompetent, that they were publishing the names of the people that they were secretly dealing with in the Irish American community.
Yeah.
You know, it's a huge thing, because if you become a spy, and your boss is putting your name in print, and that's now all over these documents, that's pretty damaging stuff.
Yeah, but also, Neil, the line is not great. Can you maybe put the...
Can you hear me better
now? Oh, I can hear you better now. Okay. Yeah, I know you're new to radio, so...
I was on once before with Brendan Ward.
I know.
Yeah.
What, you're giving your age away too? I don't think that's...
Yeah, back in 1902.
You know, also the skullduggery of, you know, the famous, the Boston tapes, the Boston College, interviews that were very damaging, you know, to a lot of people who are still... alive and around, and
right.
Interviews. Can you address that just for
a moment? I think it's part of the same thing, where you have people thinking that they're in private doing something. The people who testified in Boston College, which was a program put together by a journalist called Ed Maloney, and Boston College themselves, which was a series of interviews with leading IRA figures. In his case, he picked 90% of the people who were anti-Gerry Adams.
Sure.
And he got them on tape, and they were reassured that the tapes would never be made public. So they basically said a lot of things about who committed what murders, what happened with the poor McConville woman, various major things that they admitted to themselves, and they thought they were secure that these tapes would never be released in their lifetime. But, you know, what happens is the RUC went to court, to the Northern Ireland Police Service, and they won in an American court the right to investigate the tapes on the basis that they contained evidence about crimes committed. So people who had given their names and their information and told their stories and admitted to crimes were suddenly being named and shamed and put before courts, despite the fact that they thought that that would never happen. So I think it's just another example of, if you're going to inform on somebody, you should really, you know, leave it till you're on your deathbed.
Yeah.
Because it's quite likely that it'll come out.
But again, it was all, you could group that in as well, you know, with the fear that the British government had that this Irish America was in fact, you know, a very nice, a great outfit as long as you keep it in America, but geez, don't have it, you know.
Yeah, the most interesting observation, Adrian, is that if Bill Clinton had gone along with the British, if he had said, like most people expected him, who didn't know the situation, to say, well, I'm not going to get tangled up in Ireland, especially a visa for a quote-unquote terrorist like Gerry Adams, the war would still be going on in the North. There's no question about it. There would have been no special envoy, no George Mitchell, no President Clinton visiting Ireland, no big push from the United States to bring the parties together. None of that would have happened if Bill Clinton had listened to the British. And the more you read these papers, the more admiration that you get for what Bill Clinton did. Because he had guys like Tom Foley, who was a complete Anglophile and was Speaker of the House, attacking him quite viciously on getting involved in Ireland. And Foley at one point offers, like Costello did, to go to Ireland and be the special envoy and look into this whole thing and come back. And then he says, and I'd come back and I'd give more money to the International Fund for Ireland, but I wouldn't find anything wrong. So you realize just how close the gap between failure and success was. If Clinton had said, this thing is too much trouble, I really don't want to get involved.
Yeah.
I honestly believe there'd still be fighting on the streets in Belfast.
And you'd have a great number of people who would agree with you. Again, we know what happened. We know that their attempts ended in utter failure. But the fact that somehow Britain would expose themselves and a failed attempt, that one is a mystery. But anyway,
Adrian, I mean, the Irish government, I think, has a 50-year wait before you get your hands on documents.
Yeah,
which is about right. But the British have done it within 25, and these people are still around who are doing this kind of stuff. So,
aren't we glad we didn't take a job with them? I mean, in hindsight, you know.
Well, you know, I would bet they never thought their names would appear in secret files that were released to the public.
Yeah, by them.
By them. Yeah, it's not like I went and wrote up the story and did all the research. It was all there.
Yeah, well, I'm sure a lot of people can now say, I told you so, but if we had a list of 1,000, prominent or spies that we may have recognized, I don't think that Frank Costello would be on that list, you know, and your other buddy.
Doyle.
Yeah, you know, as well.
Yeah, you know, I don't know why people do it, because what do you get in the end? You're turning on your own people. You're giving information. You're doing things that are against everything that your own people stand for. And, you know, what are you getting in?
You know,
the British will walk away from you and put your name in lights 25 years later and point the finger and say he was an informer.
Yeah.
You know, there's no worse word in the Irish language than informer, Adrian, as you know.
Yeah. Quislings who sold out her Patriot game. Oh, my God. All right. Well, anyway, you're not related to Costello, right? No?
To who?
To Frank Costello. He's not part of you.
He's my first cousin, yeah.
First cousin, twice removed.
And 28 times removed now.
Yeah. and now permanently removed. Now, we don't even, but again, the shock is that, you know, again, right under our noses, somebody that we actually, you know, I wouldn't
say. He's still working on issues relating to Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
You know, he's back in Northern Ireland now, and, you know, he's going to have to face his own problems in terms of people.
Right.
Now realizing that he was feeding information to the British all the time.
Yeah. I'd say his bags are packed for some place. You know.
Paddy Mass.
Oh, stop.
They're all informers down there.
Oh, my God. All right, Neil. Thanks.
Thank you,
again.
Adrian.
And it is on Irish Central. And for people who would like to, you know, follow the story, or for those who say this must be some, there must be some mistake here, you've spelled it out. And I would assume that Irish Central and is the place to, and I'm sure Irish Voice newspaper, that won't.
Thank you, Adrian.
Yeah.
You know, it's just one of these stories that absolutely comes out of nowhere. It's like the story you're dealing with, which I feel very strongly about, the famine.
Irish Hunger Memorial. Very
part of the blue, you're told something major is going to happen. It was the very same with the British spying thing that just came out of nowhere.
Yeah. Well, okay, but it's all there, and this... again, we're in shock. We're actually in shock with both issues, but particularly on the fact that somebody somewhere, it's not just Costello, but somebody somewhere along the line is going to get a talking to, a telling off, would you say?
I would think so.
Yeah.
I would.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
God bless.
Great to be on.
All right.